You are Locked On Balls, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome into a preview edition of Locked On Vols. It's Tennessee and Vanderbilt, the regular season finale, coming up tomorrow at 3:45 Eastern Time. Today's episode of Locked On Vols is brought to you by NetSuite. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. Head on over to netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA for special end-of-the-year financing on all the number one financial system for your growing business. That is NetSuite, proud sponsor of Locked On Vols. I am your host, Eric Kane, at underscore Kaner and at Locked On Vols. Today, our show is loaded. We will preview Tennessee and Vanderbilt. We will check in with the publisher of VandySports.com. That is Chris Lee, coming up in segment number two, and we'll get a pulse on Tennessee basketball. Again, Tennessee basketball will be back in action later today against Tennessee Tech. We'll talk with Mike Wilson of Knox News. But really, I'm going to keep my part of the show short and sweet because I know you want to hear from some other voices. And again, I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Let me get that out there first and foremost. Hope you enjoyed time, fellowship with one another, your family and friends. And I hope you're looking forward to a big sports weekend for this Tennessee football and basketball team. All right, so here is my preview of Vanderbilt. Tennessee should beat the crap out of them. I mean, let's be honest here. And it's kind of like South Alabama. It's a game to where you never want to overlook an opponent, especially an SEC opponent. And if this series has taught us anything, I mean, you know, Vanderbilt, I wrote in my preview piece, I want to say they've won 5 of the last 9 or something like that after Tennessee just straight dominated, won 22 in a row at one point in time from, I think, 84 to 2010 or whatever. It just kind of is what it is. Now that math doesn't add up, but you know what I'm just saying, maybe 04. It is what it is. Tennessee has been, I mean, there's a reason why Tennessee fans call Vanderbilt a little brother. It's because it's just not been a challenge. But in this Vanderbilt team, it's 2-9, 0-7 in conference play. It has given up 30-plus points to every SEC opponent on the schedule, excluding South Carolina. It's season low in terms of points given up. I came all the way back in week two at Colorado State, where it gave up 21 points to Colorado State in that 24-21 win. It's lost 6 games in a row. It hasn't won since October the 12th in a game over UConn, 30-28. It's pretty much last in every major statistical category, both offensively and defensively. It has been an absolute train wreck for head coach Clark Lee in year number one. Having said all that, though, and Chris Lee will touch on it a little bit as well, they have played really hard the last couple of weeks. All right. It was, you know, had a chance to make it a one possession football game against Ole Miss late in the fourth quarter last week. Played really sharp second half defense against Kentucky 2 weeks ago. You know, took Missouri down to the wire until Tyler Beatty kind of went off. And that's Tyler Beatty that leads the SEC in rushing. I know a lot of people, not everybody, small majority, but a lot of people didn't like that I was such a big Tyler Beatty fan, apparently, when Tennessee played Missouri, because I was hyping him up, saying he's not that good. Well, 8 games later, he's still leading the SEC in rushing, so there's that. They probably should have won that South Carolina game in Columbia. You know, Vanderbilt's bad, but it is playing hard. It's giving effort. It's trying to kind of change the narrative a little bit. Again, against Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss's defense is not... it's not great. We know that, right? But, you know, Vanderbilt had over 450 yards of total offense against Ole Miss. That is a top 10 team in the college football playoff rankings right now. So give them credit. They're not just folding over and just calling quits, right? They're trying, but it is what it is. It was a disaster from the get-go, losing to ETSU in week one, 23-3 at home. And that's with ETSU getting a touchdown call back. I mean, the Clark Lee era just couldn't got off to a worse start. And I called it too, right? I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a failure, but I remember sitting at SEC Media Days, listening to the Vanderbilt players get up there and talk. And then, of course, questions were asked about, what do you like about your new coach, the new program, the new culture, all yada, 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 all this stuff. And they were saying stuff like, yeah, he's all about earning stuff. Like, you got to earn it. It's a privilege to play football at Vanderbilt. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. But he's like, he took our lockers away. He took our numbers away. Like, we had to earn all that back at practice. Like, I mean, don't be a child, okay? Like, I mean, give it, like, go to work, right? Don't that is stupid. That is so stupid. I remember sitting right there in Hoover, Alabama, saying, wow, that's stupid. That's dumb as hell. Week one, evidently it wasn't all kumbaya by that point because, again, it seemed that they just drilled the other, not last year, 2 years ago, drilled them 23-3. So it is what it is, right? But ETSU came off that loss. Give Vanderbilt credit. Responded, went on the road, won the following week, Colorado State. Won 3 weeks later against UConn, but it hasn't won since, okay? It is, you know, 15 points is what it averages on offense per game. That's last in the SEC. 311 yards of total offense, last in the SEC. 187 yards of passing, last in the SEC. 124 yards of rushing, that's 12th in the SEC. First down, 17 a game, that is 13th in the SEC. It has scored only 18 offensive touchdowns all year. You know, that's bad. You look over at defense. Surrenders 35 points per game, last in the SEC. Allows 459 yards per game, last in the SEC. Allows 273 yards passing per game, last in the SEC. Allows 186 yards on the ground per game, 12th in the SEC. Allows 21 first downs per game, 11th in the SEC. You get my drift here, right? I mean, Vanderbilt statistically is just horrific on paper. But it's why you play the game. You know Vanderbilt will get up for this game more than any other game on the schedule. Every single year, it's Tennessee and Vanderbilt. This is the game that they wait for every single year. So Tennessee, still not good enough to take anybody lightly. And Tennessee shouldn't take it lightly. But there will be a lot of emotions. It's Senior Day. We've been talking all week about Senior Day. And hats off to these seniors that have, some of these seniors have gone through three head coaches here at Tennessee. It will be emotional for the Volunteers pregame. But you got to snap and clear. You got to put that phase behind you, go play a football game. And if Tennessee shows up, doesn't turn the football over, and plays the game that we've seen them play all year, I think Tennessee could win by 30. Literally, that line was 31. I was talking last weekend going in saying, you know, where do you think this line will be? I was talking to one of my buddies at the station, Logan Ward, and he said, oh, I think, you know, somewhere around 32, 33. I'm like, whoa, that is way too high. But the more I study it, and I understand Vanderbilt's gotten better, see what it did against Kentucky and Ole Miss, I still think if Tennessee goes out there and plays this game, it could win by 30. I really, really do. So that's kind of what it is. One concern I have, I mean, it won't be a perfect game for Tennessee regardless, but one concern I do have is the quarterback, Mike Wright. He is not a good passer, but he is a runner. He is fast, and he can make some people miss, and he can cause some problems on the ground. Tennessee will have to be sharp against Mike Wright. So it's Tennessee and Vanderbilt tomorrow, 3:45 Eastern time. I believe it's on the SEC Network. You can follow my Twitter accounts, @_Kaner, for live tweeting. I will try to continue to live tweet on the Locked On Vols account. The guy that usually does it will be unavailable this weekend, so you might just want to give me a follow, @_Kaner, if you want to stay dialed in with the live tweetings this weekend. So let's go ahead and get ready with Chris Lee. He'll talk even more about Vanderbilt coming up here in segment number two. But before we get into that, guys, it is NetSuite, okay? This is it, the putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software? To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, all right? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of the surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control by upgrading to NetSuite. Over 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite, and right now, through the end of the year, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program to those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA. Head on over to netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA for a special end-of-the-year financing on the number one financial system for growing businesses. Again, that is netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA. Want to welcome to the show Chris Lee. He is the publisher of VandySports.com. That's the rival site covering Vanderbilt football, basketball, Vanderbilt athletics, baseball, of course, and he does a couple other things as well. Chris, how you doing today, man?
I am doing well.
Well, I appreciate you joining me. And Tennessee, Vanderbilt set to renew an old rivalry come Saturday. Tennessee, a team that's trending in one direction. Vanderbilt, it looks like, trending in the other. What can you tell me overall just about the season and a snapshot for Vanderbilt football this year?
Well, it's been a miserable season, and it's come at a time where you looked at the program coming into this year and you just thought it can't possibly get worse, and yet it has. I mean, I look at their season to date, and they do have two wins, but they've also got a 20-game conference losing streak. And if you look at bigger measures, I'm a big fan of the Sagarin rankings. Well, they're 143rd in there this week, and they're behind some teams that I didn't even know had football programs that are FCS teams. And now, having said that, you look at the last few weeks, and you can make the case it's gotten better. You go back to October 16th, where they lose a game to South Carolina where they probably shouldn't have lost. Then they get blown out by Mississippi State. They play Missouri down to the final 2 minutes before Tyler Beatty breaks a big run. You know, they play Kentucky, horrible first half, but better second half. And then last week they go to Ole Miss and really shocked me with the way they played. Now, again, some of that may be due to Kentucky and Ole Miss being disinterested. I mean, I think they could win those games with less than optimal effort. And so let's be fair. But, you know, in the midst of the miserable season that I've covered, there have been signs of improvement lately, and I'm really interested to see if any of that translates into what we see on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Ole Miss game last weekend. I mean, it's a game where Vanderbilt put up over, I want to say, 450 yards of total offense. Now gave up 470, but still, you know, scored 17 points on Ole Miss. Doesn't have the best defense, but it's a good football team. What went well in that football game to allow Vanderbilt to, you know, have some success, and it was close to being a one-score game there in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, that's one of the odder offensive box scores you'll ever see, because for Vanderbilt to get 450 on anybody at this point, you know, without their best running back, Ramon Davis, has been out a while, with an offensive line that isn't very good, and without the quarterback that they started the season with as its starter, you know, it says a lot. I mean, it's a good line, but you look, they also had 96 plays. And so on a per-snap basis, which I know is how we judge offenses a lot these days, it really wasn't that impressive a performance if you go yards per play. That said, I don't believe that the stats in themselves always explain everything. I think you look at Ole Miss's offense. I think if you're going to have a chance to keep the game close against them, and frankly, you can say the same for Tennessee because the offensive style is going to be very similar, you got to keep that offense off the field. And being able to keep the ball for 96 snaps, you know, even though the yards per play were not very good, that accomplished that goal. And so I look at that and I say it was a weird line, but you look at what Vanderbilt had to do and how that affected their defensive performance. And frankly, I think if you know going in that you're giving up, what, 31 points to Ole Miss with that offense and with Matt Corral, you take that. They did their job in that regard. And I think that was an interesting way that game developed.
Chris Lee of VandySports.com. And you mentioned the quarterbacks. You know, Ken Seals started the first six games of the season. I believe Mike Wright has started four of the last five, including last week's game at Ole Miss. What's been the story of the quarterbacks? I know a lot of turnovers and a lot of inaccurate passing, but kind of been what's the formula to who's been under center pretty much this year?
Well, right now their quarterback is Mike Wright. And at first that was because of injuries to Ken Seals. He hurt his finger. He hurt his hip against Kentucky in the first half. And frankly, Ken's a guy that I think has got a ton of promise. He had, what was it, I think four 300-yard passing games as a true freshman last year for an awful team that couldn't block. And if you can do that at Vanderbilt under those circumstances, I like your chance to have a good career. It has really fallen apart for him in year two. I think it started with an offensive line that can't block. They're improving in the running game, but their pass blocking is abysmal. I don't think their offensive scheme is very good. They asked him to make too many throws that I thought took too long to develop. And it's just been a disaster for him. And since then, he's pretty much lost his job. Mike Wright is going to be the guy. Mike has led them to better offensive performances, and Mike as a passer is not where he needs to be, but what he can do is he's got, what I think, 10.7 speed in the 100 meters, and Missouri, they found out the hard way. He broke a couple of 60-plus yard runs against them. So Mike gives them a dimension that Ken just doesn't have. That's when they can't pass block or when they just need to dial up a run. He can break a big play, and so right now he's the guy they're rolling with, because frankly, the offense has just run better with him.
So in knowing that with Mike Wright and his ability to impact the football game with his legs, and in studying Tennessee's defense and maybe catching a Tennessee game, you know, on TV the last couple of weeks, do you think that a focal point for Vanderbilt will to be running, using him to run against Tennessee's defense because they haven't shown an ability to stop a running quarterback yet?
Yeah, I mean, Matt Corral was the illustration of that, right? He ran for, I think, a buck 95. Now, it took him 30-something carries. But, you know, running quarterbacks do a lot of things. Not only can you break a big play, but they're those guys that when it's third and seven, you got everybody covered and you've done your job, they can run for nine and get a first down and keep the clock going. And that's just such a headache if you're a defensive coordinator. I don't think Mike is Matt Corral by any stretch of the imagination, not even as a runner. He's more of a straight-line guy who doesn't maybe have some of the elusive qualities that he needs to develop. But when you're 10-7 and 100 meters, sometimes all you need is a little crack. Again, he's broken some runs this year. Yeah, I think that's something that someone else brought up to me, that Tennessee has had issues with stopping running quarterbacks. Mike certainly is about as fast as any quarterback in the league. And I'll be interested, now that he's more comfortable under center and taking more reps, if that's something that can translate on Saturday.
Does he run track at Vanderbilt as well, or is that just date back to his high school days?
No, they don't really have a men's track program, so that's not an option.
I got you. Let's talk a little defense right now. You know, on paper it looks like it's kind of spread out a little bit. You got two linebackers playing in the middle that kind of lead the way in terms of tackling for this team, but not a whole lot of TFLs for one specific player, not a whole lot of sacks for one specific player, but they all kind of are kind of even there. It looks like Vanderbilt plays a decent amount of players, don't really have a combination of guys up front. Tell me a little bit more about this Vanderbilt defense.
Well, they don't really have imposing players up front, and they don't have any speed in the back seven to compete with the rest of the league. And when that's kind of your starting point, and I don't mean to make fun of them, it's really hard to succeed. I think that they've done a pretty good job the last few weeks in terms of playing to, I can't even say playing to their strengths because I don't know what they are, but in terms of, it could have gotten really bad, right? And to give up 31 or 37 to Ole Miss, I guess it was 31, I thought was a good showing. They held Kentucky to, what, 31, 34. And I know Kentucky's offense isn't great, but they've got SEC-level players. You know, what they have done, Eric, they've got a pretty good interception total, and I think they've gotten more interceptions this year than the last 2 years combined. I think it's a scheme thing. I think this defensive coordinator, compared to the last ones they've had, believes more in making aggressive plays on the ball that has paid off for them at times. They're just not going to straight up stop you. They're just not very good, again, in any one aspect. But when you can force turnovers the way they do, that keeps the games a little closer. And I think that's the thing that's been interesting is they've shown the ability when somebody makes a bad throw or bad decision, they can get some picks there. And I think that's one thing that's made them a little more competitive on the defensive side of the ball than I thought they would be, just because the talent simply just is not there.
Yeah, I've got 13 interceptions for Vanderbilt's defense this year. You know, that's a good total in the back end, whereas struggling to get to the quarterback, only 9 sacks. Hey, Chris, does Clark Lee call plays on defense?
I don't think he does, but being a defensive guy, you know, he's, I'm sure, going to have a ton of input in the game plan. Of course, he had a ton of success at Notre Dame. And, again, I think that's an area where at a time where it's hard to find a lot of bright spots, the fact that they've been able to put together something respectable some days, I think when they get some talent, you know, you have to think the upside there is better. But certainly he's going to have a big hand in what they do going forward.
And last thing, Chris, you know, bringing up Clark Lee there, it started off about as bad as it could possibly start off. And I remember sitting at SEC Media Days and hearing some of the Vanderbilt players, you know, get in front of the media and talk about the start of the Lee era and how, you know, he took the numbers away or took the lockers away and you had to earn that back. I thought that was kind of quirky at the time, to each his own, but that ETSU loss really put things into perspective. As you pointed out, I do think Vanderbilt's gotten better and better every week, putting together some good game plans. Kind of overall, is the team playing for Clark Lee? What's the talk around town? How's it going, you know, all things considered, year one for Clark Lee?
Yeah, I looked at the last 2 weeks, Eric, and, you know, they're down, what was it, 28-3 or whatever it was at half against Kentucky. They come out and I think shut Kentucky out the second half or give up a field goal. They score 14 points. They hold the ball most of the time. And then last weekend gets Ole Miss when they're, I think, a 36.5-point favorite. They showed up, and frankly, if an Ole Miss defensive back doesn't make a phenomenal pick in the last 2 minutes, then maybe they score a touchdown, get an onside kick, have a shot to make it interesting. Again, they don't have much talent. I've covered a lot of Vandy teams, and this one's got about as little talent as any I've ever covered. But you go back in four of the last five weeks, you can find something in the way they competed that you can take away and say, this team hasn't quit and it's playing for them. In a season where you just don't have much to hang your hat on, I do look at that and say, you know, a lot of teams this point of the season, heck, you look at LSU and Florida, for example, or especially Florida, which is very talented, but is kind of seemingly thrown in the towel on its season. When things go really bad for you, a lot of teams quit in that spot and fold. They haven't done that, and I do think that's a credit to Clark Lee.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for joining us. For any Tennessee fan that wants to learn more about Vanderbilt leading up to this matchup over the next couple of days, where can they find some of your work?
Yeah, we're at vandysports.com. We'll have a piece probably coming up, depending on what I can get done. It'll be the 3-2-1, which is three observations, two questions, and a prediction. That's kind of the space where I do a little editorial work and explain what's going on. So that may be worth the read for Tennessee fans when I get that up later in this week, if you want to get a little better handle on this team going into Saturday.
All right, his name is Chris Lee. He is the publisher at VandySports.com. Also does podcasting, the publisher at Southeastern14.com. Follow him on Twitter at ChrisLee70. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime. Thank you.
A big thanks to Chris Lee for stopping by the show. We will check in with Mike Wilson. A little hoops action to conclude this Friday edition of Locked On Vols. But first, you know, Thanksgiving is come and gone, but Christmas is right around the corner, and you know what that means, football. There's nothing that goes better with Christmas and Thanksgiving than turkey and ham and betting, right? BetOnline has got you covered for all the holiday season, more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all your sports action this year, and you can head on over to the new updated desktop or mobile interface website and sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus by using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all you have to do. Promo code Locked On for a 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag. It's not just for football either. It's pro and college hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Las Vegas casino games. I don't want you to wait to take advantage of everything happening at betonline.ag for the rest of the 2021 season. So BetOnline is your fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports. BetOnline, we're stuffed with the deals this Thanksgiving and Christmas season. And don't forget, guys, Built Bar is one of the proud sponsors for the Locked On Podcast Network. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and it's Black Friday. This is happening today, and Built is going all out to make this Black Friday weekend the most delicious Black Friday that's ever been in the history of all Black Fridays. So new limited time flavors, new types of bars, and the winter wonderland of a deal. You want a high-end, delicious discount? All through Black Friday weekend, get at least 20% off anything and everything at Built.com. All you need is the promo code LOCK20. Again, new flavor is Ruby Chocolate Puffs. Marshmallow-y goodness covered in unique chocolate, Ruby Chocolate. This has never been done with a Built Bar before. There's dark chocolate, there's white chocolate, now there's Ruby Chocolate, and that joins the Built Bar Club. Ruby Chocolate has a beautiful rose color, perfect for the holidays. It's an actual type of chocolate that has a berry taste to it. It's unique and delicious. You also have the new Lemon Drip Cheesecake Puffs and the new Crave Bar as well. So all that is at Built.com. And from now today through Black Friday weekend, you're going to get 20% off anything at Built.com. Just use the promo code LOCK20. No need to fight the angry crowds. No camping out for hours. Your best Black Friday deals are here at Built.com. Tis the season to save and give your taste buds the gift of Built Bar. We're going to conclude a Friday show by talking with my guy, Mike Wilson of Knox News. Mike, what's up, man?
Thanks for having me on, man. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So let's talk a little bit about what happened last weekend for this Tennessee basketball team. The national stage, going up against two ranked teams, of course, number 5 Villanova and number 18 North Carolina in that Hall of Fame tip-off tournament. Kind of a story of 2 days. Saturday was just awful. Sunday, a great bounce back effort. Overall, what did you learn from the Tennessee basketball team through that competition last weekend?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing started with Santiago Vescovi for me, because he's someone that all offseason coaches, players were saying he's different. And you never really know how much stock to put into that kind of conversation around somebody, because you haven't seen it. You don't know what it's going to be, but he looks like really, 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 really good through both games. And I thought that was a great sign for Tennessee. I also thought it was interesting to note the difference when Kennedy Chandler was in the game and when he's not, and the impact that's going to have long-term this season. But yeah, as a whole, obviously a very up and down weekend. They kind of got punked by Villanova, but came back the right way. So I think Tennessee took it overall probably as a positive, because Rick Barnes likes the chance to teach his team a lesson, and Villanova certainly is that.
Of course, what Kennedy Chandler means to this team, now moving forward, it's unmatched. Can't really put it into words, but Tennessee's point guard of the future, and I say future, but also he has a role on this team now as well, and he had a major role on Sunday, is Akai Ziegler. 27 minutes, he finished with 18 points, 7 of 10 shooting from the field. Feel like he's a fan favorite now moving forward. He's got a lot of talent, and you can tell me more about this. Will we see him and Chandler on the court a lot at the same time, or was it just more of a weird personnel grouping day because of Josiah Jordan-James being out against the Tar Heels?
Yeah, there was a lot to that. And Zakai Ziegler, man, I mean, I think I tweeted it or said it back in October when Tennessee had that open exhibition or open scrimmage, that he's going to be one of those guys that fans gravitate to right away. And he showed why on Sunday. I mean, he just plays the game hard. He can shoot the ball really well. Just make some plays that you see just an attitude and an ability that it's pretty special. And as for the lineups, I've been waiting to see Rick Barnes kind of throw that three-point guard lineup out there. And it made a lot of sense to do it against North Carolina, which was very bad defensively on the perimeter. And with Josiah James out, Victor Bailey Jr. kind of struggling a little bit, it made a lot of sense to throw it in that game. And you saw the effect. I won't be surprised to see more of that through the year. I am curious how often that lineup gets used once you get into SEC play and some of those matchups. But it's a nice little weapon for Rick Barnes to have in his pocket. He can throw so many ball handlers on the court at the same time.
Okay, so let's get off subject a little bit. Let's have a little fun. The whole Garantano situation. Here we are again with Santiago Vescovi or Vescovi. I trust you more than anything. Until I see Tom put out a video, I'm going to trust what you say. How do we say Santi's name?
Okay, we're going to try to get it right here.
Okay.
So my understanding is the emphasis is supposed to be on the first syllable, not the back half. And the way that we've been saying it, Vescovi puts the emphasis in the back two syllables, specifically the second one. So my understanding is it's Vescovi.
Vescovi. Okay.
So it's a little bit more of a punch at the start.
Yeah.
And I actually minored in Spanish, so I felt like I should have recognized this sooner. that's a failure on my part. But yeah, the V is also pronounced like a B in Spanish, so it's Vescovi.
Vescovi. Okay. It's just, especially with him, a couple years ago coming in at Christmas, practicing maybe twice, getting thrown in the starting lineup, and it was just full speed ahead. He was probably just like when he goes to Starbucks and they say Bob, it's like, yeah, sure, whatever. But when you're in the program for so long and the whole Garantano thing, I mean, I was shook. Literally, I was shook because we're talking to this quarterback that has started over 20 games for the University of Tennessee, and we've all been saying his name wrong this entire time. It's just wild to me how that happens more than we think it should happen. I feel like it might happen everywhere else, but it's happened at least twice here in the last couple of years.
And I think when you look at Santi's case too, he's such a kind of low-key person who doesn't bring it on himself.
Yeah.
That I'm not too surprised he didn't bring it up. But on top of that, I think it really goes back to how he arrived at Tennessee. Like you said, came in the middle of the season, thrown into it. For some reason, I'm willing to bet that how his last name was being pronounced wasn't the thing on the forefront of his mind at that time.
No, I would.
And at that point, probably just let it go.
I would agree 100% with that. But you're right. His play has been incredible here to start the season. And the versatility that Barnes has in that backcourt, a lot of that has to do with with Santi and what he can do. Do you think he is, you know, for Tennessee to be what it wants to be this year? I mean, I know there's a lot of pieces, but do you think Santi plays more? Do you think his role in that would be more than what we originally thought coming into the season? Because through three or four games this year, I would say probably so.
You know, I wouldn't have expected that he's probably been Tennessee's best player through four games. I mean, certainly you have a case for Kennedy Chandler in that respect too, but Santi's consistency, I think, sets him apart in that regard right now. I mean, best performer, I guess, because Kennedy certainly is that team's best player. He wasn't one of those players I believe would be an X factor for this team. I thought it would be Kennedy Chandler and John Fulkerson in terms of the two guys that are really going to dictate how far this team goes. But after four games, it almost feels like those guys might be Santiago Viscovi and Olivier Kamwa in terms of what this team's going to be. So, yeah, Santi's playing at such a high level, and I think Tennessee's going to expect him to continue playing exactly how he's playing, you know, scoring 15, 16 a game, making good decisions with the ball. I think the biggest thing you see with him is just a very stark difference in explosiveness. You know, that was discussed in the preseason was he's a quicker player. But Santi's always been a little bit slow on the foot speed. Not slow, but just not the quickest player. But you see a different level of explosiveness with his first step now, with the ball, without the ball. And that's making a huge difference in his game. I mean, he's creating more space offensively. He's getting into different places. And you see a big difference just watching him.
Mike Wilson, Knox News, stopping by the show. And, Mike, I got one more. It's kind of a loaded question, talking about two guys as well. You brought up Olivier Kamwa and, of course, John Fulkerson, that front court. Kamwa has been a really nice, you know, story to begin this season. If Tennessee can, you know, rely, not maybe not to the production that he gave in the first two games, but just being solid at, you know, scoring 8 to 10 a game, getting you, you know, close to 10 rebounds a game, that would be fantastic. But, you know, those two guys in the Villanova loss, I mean, a combined 4 shot attempts between those two guys. Now, those numbers picked up in Carolina, and I get the offense is dictated through the guard play, you know, from outside in, but what do you see from Olivier Kamwa so far this season? How big of a role should he play in his hot start? And for John Fulkerson, is he looking healthier? I know he's probably not ever going to be 100% healthy, but how is he looking in terms of getting back to the old John Fulkerson that we saw for last year at times and really 2 years ago?
Yeah, I'll start with Fulkerson, because I thought kind of until that final 10 minutes against North Carolina where the three guards really, really took over, I thought Fulkerson was kind of the story of that game. I think, 6 of 7 shooting or something in that range,
yep.
14 points, 6 assists. I don't remember how many rebounds. But he made some of those plays that you got used to seeing him make 2 years ago, backing people down from almost out near the perimeter, dribbling into that fading jumper kind of from the middle of the paint, a couple pump fakes in the post, up and under. I mean, he made some of those classic John Fulkerson plays that he was making during his All-SEC season. And I thought that was a huge sign for Tennessee that he is kind of getting into that place where he was and where he wasn't last year and where he struggled. So I thought that was huge. As for Olivier, you know, I've been on the Olivier's a good player bandwagon for 3 years now. I might be the president of it. Not totally sure if that's a formal title for me, but it might be. he's just such a good athlete, has so much potential as a rebounder and defender. But you talk to Rick Barnes, you talk to Olivier, it's been a matter of him doing those things consistently, because that offensive skill that you saw against ETSU with 23 points and I think 3 three-pointers, maybe 2, but a couple 3-pointers, that skill's always been there. It's just been a matter of he didn't do the other things to stay on the court. Now you're seeing more of that. And that's really important for Tennessee because that front court is pretty thin. But I mean, behind them, Uroš Plavšić has been a foul machine through 4 games. He's got, I think, 10 in 41 minutes. That's an unsustainable rate of playing somebody. And Brandon Huntley Hatfield is still kind of feeling his way at points. I thought he played well against North Carolina too, though. But until those two guys are kind of more ready to contribute, there's a lot being asked of Olivier and Fulkerson, so they've kind of got to be consistent people.
He is at By Mike Wilson on Twitter, does a fantastic job covering the Tennessee basketball team for the Knoxville News Sentinel, also does some football work as well, and he'll be all over that baseball beat come spring. Mike, appreciate it, man. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you tomorrow at the stadium.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, man.
And again, thanks to Mike Wilson for joining the show. Man, what a fun Friday show. We got my preview for Tennessee Vanderbilt. We talked with Chris Lee, who covers Vanderbilt. And we squeezed in a little hoops action with Mike Wilson, who does a really, really nice job covering Tennessee basketball. So, guys, this has been a fun week. Thank you so much for tuning in. The numbers have been fantastic. We need to keep that up as we get in towards bowl season and the football hype kind of dies down a little bit with the regular season over. But like I said yesterday, I am so thankful for each and every one of you guys for devoting part of your days to spend with me here on this podcast. It means more to me than you will ever know. So thank you so much. Tennessee Vanderbilt, that happens tomorrow. We'll have a full recap of it on, of course, a Monday episode of Locked On Vols. Plus, we will know by then where Tennessee is going bowling. So a lot more in store. Football talk coming up on a Monday show. Plus, we'll recap Tennessee and Tennessee Tech hoops. That'll be on Monday, and it should be a really good time there. But stay dialed into @_Caner and @LockedOnVols all throughout the week for your continual football coverage of Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Now that we're done here with Locked On Vols, I want to encourage you to check out Locked On Bets, okay? Needs to be your second listen. It's your daily one-stop shop for all of your gambling needs, hosted by your boy Q with expert Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. That is Locked On Bets. Thank you guys so much, as always, for making Locked On Vols your first listen. Have a fantastic weekend, and we will do it again Monday. Be safe and enjoy the game on Saturday.